Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. 3 short statements. The first from Professor Fawaz Gerjes from the London School of Economics, then a tech scientist explaining the role of artificial intelligence in the attacks on Iran, and then Aya Ibrahim, Deutsche Welle head of current affairs, on the false perception that the Gulf states are a monolith. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
I know the narrative, the dominant narrative in the West, including in Germany, is that Iran represents a strategic threat to Israel and the United States and the West. The dominant narrative is that Iran is a terrorist-led state. Iran is dangerous. The reality is, in the past few years, Iran really has been on the defensive as opposed on the offensive. In fact, Israel now's strategy is offensive, continuously, whether in Lebanon and Syria and the West Bank and Gaza against Iran. The Iranians really went out of their way to make painful concessions to the United States to reach a nuclear deal. Because as you said, Iran faces an existential crisis. It's pressed between a rock, major popular opposition, and also the fear of an external war. This is, we have to remind our audience, for the sake of a balanced reporting, that this is a war of choice. This is Donald Trump's war and Benjamin Netanyahu. This is an illegal war.
In the U.S.'s first strikes on Iran, AI reportedly played a crucial role, assessing intelligence, identifying targets, and running battle simulations during Operation Epic Fury. For all of that, the U.S. military is said to have used Claude AI. That's a powerful large language model developed by the U.S. tech giant Anthropic. Interesting detail. President Donald Trump told U.S. agencies to stop working with Anthropic just last Friday. Why the ban? Anthropic refused to allow its software to be used for mass surveillance of US citizens, and it opposes full AI access to autonomous weapon systems. As a result, Anthropic has fallen out of favor with the Trump administration. All this shows it's difficult if a government relies heavily on a private company for AI intelligence. The Pentagon has reached deals with ChatGPT maker OpenAI and Elon Musk's xAI, but it could take months to replace Claude. Anthropic AI is already deeply woven into tools like Palantir's AI platform, which supports US defense and intelligence work. The bottom line? AI is already shaping modern warfare. The big question is, which areas will the technology get access to and who will be in charge?
The Gulf states are not a monolith, and that certainly applies to their relationship with Iran. So there are varying degrees of closeness among the Gulf states. Oman, for example, which was actually mediating the diplomatic talks between the U.S. and Iran up until last week to try to get concessions on the nuclear file, has quite a good relation with Iran. Qatar has quite a good relation with Iran. And then you have varying degrees of tensions with Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, and so on. But I think what can be said almost generally about the Gulf states is that they don't want this. No Gulf leader wants to see the scenes that we've been seeing over the skies of Dubai, of Manama, of Abu Dhabi, and certainly not over Doha. These are countries that want stability, they want economic prosperity. And these countries, I mean, they barely had a chance to react to the U.S.-Israeli strike on Iran before they came themselves under fire. And then we saw the string of condemnations and fury coming from them. Of course, what Iran says is that, they can't reach the U.S. with their strikes. They've been striking Israel in counterstrikes, obviously. So they see the 40,000 U.S. personnel scattered across the region as fair targets. But for the leaders of these Gulf countries, these are, of course, violations of their sovereignty, massive national security threats. Just look at the mayhem that we've been seeing, unprecedented in the Gulf. Think about the image that all of these Gulf countries have been trying and working really, really hard to project about themselves into the world for the past decades. And look at these images. These things just don't match up.
Those short statements were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. The press reviews were informative all week long, but we will only listen to Monday's stories from the Middle East and Europe on the war on Iran. Then Trump threatened Spain after they refused the U.S. military use of their bases, and President Sanchez replied. The U.S. oil and fuel embargo on Cuba has left them with little electricity, no radio or television, and almost no transportation. France 24.
Beginning with the reactions, of course, in the Middle East, including those newspapers supportive of the Islamic regime. Tell us what you've been reading, Antonio.
Well, I'd like to start by showing you the front page of the regime-aligned Tehran Times, where you have a sober, monochrome front page with an image of Ayatollah Khamenei and the headline, For Iran's Independence and Glory. And the Lebanese paper that's also close to Hezbollah, so loyal to the Iranian regime, the Lebanese paper Al-Akhbar, has also on the front page an image of the deceased Ayatollah against a blood-red background with the headline, one word in Arabic reading, resist. So this is a reflection of the continued defiance of the Iranian regime and their allies in the face of actions taken by the US and Israel. Meanwhile, also in Lebanon, L'Orient Le Jour, very anti-Hezbollah paper that's in French language, you have the Ayatollah also on the front page, but the headline very different. The tearing of the Axis is that headline. On the inside pages of L'Orient Le Jour, they provide a breakdown of what they see as the likely or plausible outcomes to this current situation. The first that they give, Iran pushing Washington to retreat, by losing them the patience and support of their allies in the Gulf. The second proposition they put forward is that the Islamic regime could be pushed to capitulate should its stocks of drones and missiles start to run dry. A more pragmatic leader than the now deceased Ayatollah Khamenei might be inclined to make certain concessions to the US and Israel. The third outcome they suggest is that Donald Trump takes the win over the assassination of Ali Khamenei and swiftly steps back to save face, exonerating, if you will, himself, washing his hands of whatever chaos may ensue next. And of course, to avoid drawing the US into one of these forever wars that he has so railed against. The fourth outcome they suggest in L'Orient du Jour that they say is the least likely, but the one that Donald Trump, of course, is calling for is for the regime to be toppled from within. Of course, this comes hard on the heels of the Iranians really trying, in many cases, to topple this regime and it ending in such enormous bloodshed. The front page of Haaretz is focused, of course, on the Israeli civilian casualties. And on the inside pages, once again, you have this defiance of the Iranian regime. Khamenei's successors are showing no signs of surrender, and they may push even further.
Continuing a little bit further afield, Europe and the US, the media there still reeling, really, 3 days on from Donald Trump's decision to initiate these strikes in the first place, you found.
Well, yes, you've got some very damning pieces in the Times, obviously the front page. Trump vows to press on. But you've got this very damning opinion piece. He said no to foreign wars. So what made Trump act? This article opens less than 2 weeks after the first meeting of his Board of Peace. President Trump through Board of Peace. That's some wordplay, but overall the message is that despite his repeated promises to end these forever wars, he looked for a rally around the flag moment. He looked for political gain when he saw this opportunity amid a difficult time for his administration, amid the Epstein files, and of course, as the American voters still await the economic boom he's so long promised. L'Humanité is similarly damning, describes Donald Trump seeking a Nobel Prize for war, and is extremely cynical as well, sceptical of his motives, suggesting he's been deeply disingenuous, saying that he has used the recent repression against the Iranian people as a pretext, and negotiations over the nuclear deal last week was little more than bait.
The day after Donald Trump took aim at Spain for refusing to allow its shared military bases for use in the war in Iran, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez fired back.
Spain's position can be summed up in three words: no to war. We will not be complicit in something that is bad for the world and that is also contrary to our values and interests, simply out of fear of retaliation from some.
Going on to say governments should improve lives for their people, Sanchez had veiled criticism of his own.
It's absolutely unacceptable for those leaders who are incapable of fulfilling this task to use the smoke of war to hide their failure and line the pockets of a few.
It's not the first time Madrid and Washington have been at loggerheads. Sanchez backed out of a previous promise among NATO members to boost defense and security spending to 5% of Spanish GDP, something Trump also railed against on Tuesday, while again wielding his habitual trade threats.
They were the only country that in NATO would not agree to go up to 5%. I don't think they wouldn't agree to go up to anything. They wanted to keep it at 2%, and they don't pay the 2%. So we're going to cut off all trade with Spain. We don't want anything to do with Spain.
It's not quite sure how Trump might follow through on that threat. The European Union negotiates in trade matters as a bloc, and Brussels has backed Madrid in solidarity and already has mechanisms in place to respond to commercial attacks against members.
In Havana, only the moon and the cars light up the streets. Almost the entire island of Cuba is once again plunged into darkness due to a power grid failure.
The Antonio Guterres thermoelectric power station has caused a power outage in the central, western, and eastern regions of the country. Protocols are currently being implemented to gradually restore power. The situation has led to the interruption of radio and television signals due to technical problems.
In addition to these outages, the population is experiencing regular power cuts that can last more than 15 hours. The crisis has worsened since the capture of Nicolas Maduro in January and the end of Venezuelan oil shipments to the island under pressure from Washington. No oil tankers have officially entered Cuba since the 9th of January. The outages are paralyzing the country's entire economy.
I'm not going to work anymore. I can't cook because the appliances are electric. And there's no communications. I can't watch the news. We don't have any lights, which are essential for life. Everything's becoming complicated. It's getting worse every day.
Because of US sanctions, the Cuban authorities have also suspended the sale of diesel, rationed petrol, and reduced healthcare provision in hospitals. Havana accuses Donald Trump of wanting to stifle the island's economy, which has been under U.S. embargo since 1962.
Those press reviews and reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, also most podcast sites. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Radio Havana, Cuba went dark on Tuesday night from the previously reported power cuts. Mexican President Sheinbaum reaffirmed her country's commitment to supply aid to Cuba. The 10th anniversary of the murder of Honduras indigenous environmental activist Berta Cáceres was acknowledged by Cuba. On Monday, the Secretary of Iran's Security Council reminded the world that his country did not initiate the war with Israel and the United States, which began shortly after mediators had hailed a breakthrough with Iran agreeing to zero stockpiling of uranium at talks in Geneva. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, reaffirmed her government's unwavering commitment to the sovereignty and well-being of the Caribbean nation, confirming that humanitarian aid to the island will continue steadily. During her regular morning press conference, the president highlighted the arrival of a second shipment of essential supplies, emphasizing that this action supports the foreign policy of brotherhood and mutual support among the peoples of Latin America in the face of external pressures towards struggling the Cuban economy. The shipment adds to the 814 tons delivered on February 12, strengthening a bridge of solidarity that defines the tightening of the economic, commercial, and financial blockade imposed by the United States for more than six decades, which Mexico has repeatedly denounced as a violation of the human rights of the Cuban people.
10 years ago today, Honduran environmental and political activist Berta Cáceres was killed in her home in La Esperanza. A threat to big business interests in Honduras, she was murdered by armed intruders in the early morning hours of March the 3rd, 2016, after dozens of threats on her life. A former soldier with the U.S.-trained Special Forces Unit of the Honduran military confirmed that her name was on a hit list months before her assassination. For her work, she won the Goldman Environmental Prize in 2015. For a grassroots campaign that successfully pressured the world's largest dam builder to pull out of the Agua Zarca Dam at the Rio Guacanay in Honduras. Berta Cáceres became a symbol of resistance and the fight for indigenous rights and sovereignty. She was murdered on this date 10 years ago today. Yesterday, Monday, Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Larijani, said that Iran did not initiate the current war. As in the past 300 years, Iran did not start this war. Our brave armed forces have not engaged in a single offensive operation, acting solely in self-defense. The Security Council chief of Iran pledged that his country would fiercely defend itself and its 6,000-year-old civilization, regardless of the costs. The remarks follow a fresh round of aerial aggression launched by the United States and Israel, marking a new escalation just 8 months after previous unprovoked attacks on the Islamic Republic in June of last year, 2025. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was assassinated in the first salvo of the terrorist attacks on Saturday, even as Tehran was engaged in diplomatic talks with Washington over its nuclear program. Iran swiftly initiated retaliation, launching coordinated barrages of missiles and drones targeting Israeli-occupied territories and U.S. military bases across the region. President Trump launched the attacks without congressional approval. They came shortly after mediators hailed a breakthrough in indirect talks with the United States and Iran in Geneva. And when Iran agreed to zero stockpiling of uranium as a guarantee that it would not pursue a nuclear weapon.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. And in fact, the streaming service ended Tuesday night, and hopefully it'll be back on soon, and the shortwave as well. When it comes back on, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at 6000. At their website, radiohc.cu, when it's working, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. I'm really sorry about my voice. I lost my voice today. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I am truly grateful for the donations. They're essential for the weekly production and website fees for this show, which I then supply freely to more than 100 radio stations across the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with NHK Japan. Japan is considering burying high-level radioactive waste on an island in their most eastern holding in the Pacific Ocean. French President Macron announced plans to increase his country's number of nuclear warheads. France currently has about 290 nuclear weapons. The Chinese foreign minister discussed the war on Iran with Iranian foreign minister. The death toll of the schoolgirls in the missile strike in Iran rose to 171. The American Society of International Law has expressed concern about the U.S.-Israeli war now expanding across the Middle East. A United Nations fact-finding mission has strongly condemned the U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran, calling for an immediate halt to attacks by all parties. NHK Japan.
Japan's government is considering an island in the Pacific Ocean as a possible final disposal site for high-level radioactive waste. It has asked the local government for permission to conduct a survey to gauge the island's suitability. Minami Torishima is part of the Ogasawara Islands in the Pacific and is Japan's easternmost island. An industry ministry official handed over documentation to the mayor of Ogasawara Village on Tuesday. The document asked for permission to conduct a first-stage survey, also known as a literature survey. The ministry has been looking for more survey sites, but so far only three municipalities in Hokkaido and Saga prefectures have been asked to conduct first-stage surveys. As of March 2025, roughly 2,500 canisters of high-level radioactive waste were being stored at two sites in Aomori and Ibaraki prefectures. But legislation approved in 2000 requires them to be moved to a final disposal site more than 300 meters underground. The waste must be stored there for tens of thousands of years, away from human habitats, until radioactivity levels drop. The geological disposal method is being used for final disposal by other countries that have nuclear power.
French President Emmanuel Macron says his country will increase its number of nuclear warheads in response to rising security threats. Macron announced a decision at a nuclear submarine base of the French Navy on Monday. He cited growing global tensions and pointed out Russia's development of new nuclear weapons as it continues its invasion of Ukraine.
It is essential to strengthen our nuclear weapons. I have ordered that the number of nuclear warheads be increased.
An assessment by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute shows France had a stockpile of 290 nuclear warheads in 2025, the world's fourth largest. Macron says he has not disclosed the number of nuclear warheads his country has or plans to have. His announcement signals a policy shift in France as it seeks stronger nuclear capabilities. Talks with eight other countries, including Germany, Britain and Poland, have been advancing about expanding France's nuclear deterrence to Europe. Macron and German Chancellor Friedrich Merz also issued a joint declaration on Monday to strengthen cooperation in deterrence. This will include setting up a so-called high-ranking nuclear steering group. This will be responsible for coordinating strategy involving conventional weapons, missile defense, and France's nuclear capabilities. Germany will also take part in France's nuclear drills for the first time. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi has spoken with his Iranian counterpart Abbas Araghchi. China's foreign ministry says Monday's phone call was held at Iran's request. According to the Chinese ministry, Araghchi told Wang, the United States has violated all international laws and crossed Iran's red lines. He said Iran has no choice but to defend itself with all its might. Wang said Beijing supports Iran in safeguarding its sovereignty, security, territorial integrity and national dignity. He added China has urged the U.S. and Israel to immediately halt military operations. Officials say Wang also spoke on Monday with his French counterpart. He also talked with the foreign minister of Oman, which has acted as a mediator between Washington and Tehran. Also on Monday, Russia's foreign ministry released a statement calling on all parties involved to resolve all issues through political and diplomatic means. It said Russia is deeply concerned about the escalating armed confrontation across the Middle East. It accused the U.S. and Israel of seeking regime change in Iran through so-called unscrupulous methods, including the killing of a sovereign state's leadership.
Iran's foreign ministry says the death toll from Saturday's attack on an elementary school in the southern province of Hormuzgan has risen to 171.
The people of America should ask their statesmen, were our children a threat to U.S. national security?
The American Society of International Law has expressed concern about the use of force by the United States and the explosion of violence across the Middle East. It said in a statement that Trump offered no evidence of an imminent threat from Iran, and therefore no basis under international law for a preemptive strike. The statement released on Monday also mentioned the U.S. military operation in Venezuela in January. It said the Trump administration has once again demonstrated its disregard for international law and has violated the U.N. Charter prohibiting the unprovoked use of force. The society noted that U.S. law, at minimum, requires consulting Congress before armed forces are involved in such attacks. It said the administration apparently spent many weeks preparing for war, so it had no reason not to have sought Congress's consent. The statement concludes by urging all parties to respect international humanitarian law and the legal order. The nonprofit and nonpartisan society is based in Washington. It says its members include attorneys, academics, and judges from more than 100 nations.
A UN fact-finding mission has strongly condemned the U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran and called for an immediate halt to attacks by all parties. The independent mission has been investigating the human rights situation in Iran. It released a statement on Wednesday. The declaration says the attacks run counter to the UN Charter, which prohibits the use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. It says the rules of international law must apply to all and be consistent. The statement expressed deep shock over reports that U.S.-Israeli airstrikes targeted an elementary school, killing more than 150 students and teachers. It also criticized Iran's retaliatory attacks on neighboring countries, which have killed scores of civilians and damaged public infrastructure.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735. Or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. NHK may also be easily found at most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new Shortwave Report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. Please consider subscribing. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. In April, the Shortwave Report will be celebrating having been on the air for 30 years without a break. Sorry about my lost voice. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.